Peter John Mitchell joins our conversation. He's been with us lots on the show, senior researcher at the Institute of Marriage and Family Canada. He wrote a piece that I just read called The Best Anti-Bullying Policy, Parental Involvement. How are you?
I'm doing well, Gary. Thanks for having me on again.
Good to get you back on the show. My dad would have disagreed with that, generationally speaking, and I'm in my upper 50s now. When I had the issue, my dad said, well, then you just stand up to them. That was the entire parental involvement I got from my dad was, well, stand up for yourself.
Yeah, well, perhaps times have changed, or maybe our outlook has changed as well. And I think, as you were saying in the introduction now, there's just so many avenues for bullies to apply the kind of pressure and the kind of behavior that's just not acceptable. And it's definitely taking obviously, it's a much bigger issue in terms of, I think, awareness now. I think we're talking about it a lot more than maybe we did in the past. It was sort of, in the past, maybe you just take care of it yourself, maybe part of growing up, but that's certainly not the view now. I think we're certainly much more aware of the long-term damage that bullying can do.
It's never been okay to be bullied, but it now seems to be more okay to have the conversation.
Yeah, I think so, and I think that's good news. And if we look at what research is telling us as well, a recent poll done by MTV, the purveyor of youth culture, basically saying that kids are getting more comfortable with telling parents about incidents of bullying, and that that seems to be helping more than it did in the past, according to their survey. And we do know from other research as well that if children are going to tell an adult, it's more likely to be a parent than a teacher. So that puts parents particularly on the front line of having to navigate this with their kids.
I grew up playing a variety of sports, as most, you know, not all, but most kids do. And when I played a lot of ball, and where I grew up in house league ball, we had a mercy rule that if you were up by 5 runs or more after 7 innings, the game was over, shake hands, go home. And that always bothered me. That always bothered me that you were taking away the opportunity I had to cut the score or perhaps make a comeback. And one of the things you referenced is that 91-0 football score in Texas where a parent filed a bullying complaint. I thought it was total crap and misuse of the word bullying, but that's just from my perspective, because to me it was just offensive, not bullying.
It's certainly a misuse of the policy, and it certainly makes a mockery of the policy, but I think it also really confuses, as you say, the issue of bullying and what really stands for bullying. It's interesting that coaches on both sides, for both teams, seem baffled that complaint was raised, and certainly there might be concerns there about, you know, lopsided scores and that kind of thing. But certainly this was a misuse of that policy. Somebody, I think, took advantage of a policy and used it in a way that probably wasn't designed to be used.
Now I just cited off the top, Peter, that a school that has a zero a tolerance policy for incidents of bullying didn't work. Does it ever work?
The zero tolerance has been really bantered around, and it tends not to work. Bullying really is a relational issue, and I think that's where the heart of it has to be. And bullying thrives in the absence of adults, and I think that's the thing that we have to remember. Our kids are seeking affirmation. They're seeking to be encouraged, and I think that happens best from an adult to a young person. But I think increasingly more our kids are finding sort of their meaning and their values are being transferred from one another, kind of a horizontal rather than that vertical relationship with an adult. And so immature kids, that's what they are. They're kids. They're just developing, are kind of gaining their meaning and their sense of meaning from other immature kids. And I think that kind of creates problems. And so when we have adults absent from the scene, I think that that compounds this issue. And I think that's why bullying has thrived on the internet and cyberbullying. And I think often our approaches to cyberbullying, it's almost like refereeing a soccer game from outside the stadium. You know, we kind of coach our kids up. We try to give them kind of tips and tactics about how to deal with online bullies. But really, we kind of send them into the stadium, and then we try to referee from outside, just looking through a crack in the fence. And I think that's why we feel so helpless about this issue, because there just aren't adults online where kids go. And it's some really cruel stuff happens there.
I came to the realization when my kids were teenagers that they were much more savvy online than I'll ever be. They understand the technology. They understand that world. It's the world's foreign to me, Peter. I mean, I use the internet daily for work But when I go home, I like to say I read a book. You know what I mean? But these kids never turn it off.
I think it's a huge struggle for parents, and there's a lot of data that would show that, you know, parents that have guidelines, parents that limit the amount of even devices that that their family have, these kind of things help maintain good media use, good media practice. A lot of times now, parents are modeling that heavy use, that heavy behavior, always on the smartphone or whatever. There was a really strong worded article in the Wall Street Journal recently by Leonard Sachs, who might be a known name to some of the listeners. He's a physician in the U.S. and often talks about child development issues. And it was basically, he was saying, like, with all the monitoring software that we now have available, parents should really be without excuse in terms of monitoring what happens online. And that was a pretty harsh, pretty harsh article. And I think it really is a struggle. But at the end of the day, I think it does come back to parents and having to be monitoring what happens. And, you know, we can't maybe necessarily monitor everywhere our kids go online, especially our teenagers. But I think we have to have some guidelines and have to put some thought into that. So yeah, I think it's going to be a challenge.
Peter, it's one thing to say I'm going to monitor your computer use, but it's the smartphones. It's the texting. It's all that stuff that's, you know, that's impossible to stay on top of all the time unless the kid gets home from school and you say, give me your phone.
Yeah, I think just as the technology is pretty savvy and kids are pretty savvy, some of the software is also getting pretty savvy as well. And Sachs sort of points out that you can get software that, you know, if your child takes a photo on their phone, that you see it before they even send it. It's a little bit of cat and mouse, I guess, but some of those things can be a bit of a saver. I think also it's it is about kind of teaching proper use of technology. And I think above all this, though, the real issue comes back to that relationship, right, with caring adults, and that our students have somewhere to turn. And, when we kind of look at the research, we know that, you just see that family kind of dynamic where kids feel comfortable at home, where they feel there's good communication, there's sort of that warm caringness, but there's also guidelines and limits, tends to insulate or at least mediate some of those things that happen when kids are bullied and some of the outcomes of kids being bullied. So it really does come back to having sort of that strong adult relationship, and parents are definitely well positioned to kind of play that role and help kids mediate that through. I don't think there's an easy solution, but no. I do think we have to take kind of measures to kind of help kids through. And, you know, it's interesting to hear your story at the beginning there, Gary. I hear that from parents all the time. I hear parents who are been dissatisfied with the response from school. And I've also heard from educators who say, you know, we put on these, seminars for parents about, multimedia use and that kind of thing, and nobody shows up. And so I think there is a bit of a disconnect between parents and the school. And I think that's going to be a significant challenge. There's a couple of researchers in the U.S. that came to the conclusion, Ahmad and Brathwaite are their names, and they said really to maximize the effectiveness of our anti-bullying programs, we're going to have to take what's happening at home and we're going to have to connect it with what's happening in the school. And I think that's just a significant challenge.
Oh, I agree. And I think it has to be cooperatively, because teachers, in a lot of cases, I got a friend who teaches in the primary grades, and he says he spends more time per day with these kids than their parents do.
Yeah,
so there has to be some kind of a cooperation between the classroom teacher and the parent. And I don't want to put all the heat on teachers. You know, there's enough heat on them already to just teach the kids, let alone, you know, be their psychologist.
Yeah, I think in most cases, when other than maybe parent-teacher interviews, when there is contact between parents and teachers, there's usually some sort of issue there. So there tends to be like kind of a tension there to begin with, right?
Yeah.
I think it starts at home. I really do think it starts at home, but I think that there's going to be a challenge for educators and parents to kind of figure out how that relationship is supposed to work and how it can be more effective for our kids. And that's a huge challenge. I know it is for educators and for parents.
I would like this problem to go away. But like I said, it hasn't in my lifetime, and I'm sure it was there before I was in school. I think we're smart enough now, we're more savvy, and we're more open to having conversations in the light of day and not in the shadows, that there's got to be a way we can defeat this. If not defeat it, certainly get way ahead of it.
Yeah, I think so. I think it is part of the reality of, because it is a relationship problem, and we're all in relationships, and our kids are all in relationships. But I really do think that adult involvement and adults coming back underneath our kids, and part of it is obviously helping our victims, but it's also helping unmake bullies as well, and helping kids who do bully. And it's amazing when you look at surveys that talk with kids, and kids that have been involved in bullying incidents, a high number of them have been both the victim and have been bullies. And a lot of it is some of the experiences that they've had in life or experiences that they've had at school, and they turn that around and bully in return. And so I think it's a much more complicated issue. Sometimes we make it very black and white, but I think it's a much more involved and much more complicated issue. And perhaps that's why it's so difficult to eradicate this kind of behavior.
Gotcha. You know what? Always good to get your perspective. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Gary.
We'll talk again. Thanks, man. Peter John Mitchell.